Nippreżentaw sensira ta' intervisti ma' lecturers minn Universitajiet barranin imħija lina minn Mediterranean Institute tal-Università ta' Malta. Produzzjoni ta' Dr. Simon Merġija.
I welcome you to this second program with Professor Minoti Chakravati Kaul, in which we're discussing aspects of population growth and population transition. In the previous program, we discussed a number of issues, from the use of common land and shepherds to also the theory of population, the father, let's say, of population theory, Malthus. Today, we shall continue discussing population theory by looking at now more recent theorists, in particular to Kaul and Hoover. Then we'll discuss another concept, which is called the emptiness concept. And finally, we would like to discuss today the more recent theory of Gary Harden, the tragedy of the commons. But let's begin one by one, because we can have programs and programs on each of these theories. Let's discuss the concept of demographic transition, which obviously Malthus had hinted at when he discussed the idea of preventive checks, because practically demographic transition to a certain extent is and falls within this concept of preventive checks. Exactly what this theory is all about and what contribution was made by Kaul and Hoover in their discussion of this theory.
Yes, Malthus attributed population growth to the fact that the birth rate rises and falls according to the supply of food that is available. Now, this connection to population growth really didn't prove itself out. What really causes population to grow is not so much birth rate as changes in the death rate.
Yes.
And food supplies, when they are short in supply, definitely impacts on the number of deaths. And lack of food supplies is something which is not such an unheard of phenomenon, in the modern period, we can't conceive of deaths due to famine, but medieval periods and later periods after the medieval period did witness large-time deaths caused by lack of food. And the horrors of that kind of starvation death can still be seen in certain countries in the world today. Now, the question is, what is key to demography and demographic growth is the death rate. Now, the demographic transition theory actually shows that the rate of population growth of any country tends to be higher when the death rate starts to fall. Now, in the earlier stages of modern economic growth, most countries have both birth rates and death rates very high. So therefore, the rate of growth of population is not very high in the early stages of economic growth. But when economic growth catches on, which means when food supplies are available, definitely, and when per capita income rises, what happens is the death rate starts to fall. And so the birth rate and the death rate become further and further apart because the death rate is falling, but the birth rate really doesn't fall. What therefore happens is that the rate of growth of population in the early stages of economic growth starts to rise, not because the birth rate has risen, but because the death rate has fallen. Now, after a certain amount of time when economic development really catches on in a full-fledged way, the birth rate tends to climb down. This is partly the reason that the death rate has fallen low enough to indicate that there are certain positive changes in the economy which prevents death rates from rising, and therefore the numbers that would be needed to keep a family intact in numbers would not depend on the death rates rising again, but would rather with the birth rates falling. Also, rise in economic opportunities can also cause the cost of living to rise. And therefore, under those circumstances, having larger numbers in the family when possibilities of keeping them alive is much greater than before, causes the birth rates to come down. Also, the birth rate starts to fall because women start to enter into the labor market, and hence childcare becomes burdensome and public resources for this kind of care initially is not available. Consequently, therefore, there's a pressure, and this is a pressure of social change which brings down the birth rate. So we have then the rate of growth of population after economic development takes place. The rate of growth of population comes down because the death rate continues to fall and the birth rate also starts to fall. So the difference between the birth rate and the death rate starts to reduce. So therefore, with economic development, we associate fall in the rate of growth of population. But it is not the fall of the rate of growth of population which causes economic growth. It is the economic growth process which causes the population growth to come down via the fall in the birth rate. Hence, therefore, death rate falls because of conditions of economic growth associated with medical changes and continues to fall till a point at which it can fall no further. But the birth rate continues to fall as a result of economic development and as a result of also social change. Now, social change following economic growth is a far more difficult process than the fall in the death rate, which can fall in any country today, even without economic growth, if only certain medical facilities for causing immunization against epidemic deaths are followed. So therefore, under these circumstances, there is a positive association between economic growth and fall of population. And there is a positive correlation between birth rate falling and economic development. So most underdeveloped countries will be able to bring their birth rates, provided they are able to bring about quick social change, which is sometimes not feasible. Hence, therefore, the demographic transition theory says that population growth falls with economic growth and not the other way round. Now, in most underdeveloped countries, the experience of high rates of growth of population today is because medical facilities are relatively cheaper than bringing about economic growth. Hence, therefore, there are factors which can bring down the death rate, but the same factors which bring down the birth rate is not available. Hence, therefore, the population phobia that has grown up for most underdeveloped countries.
But even now we're in a population phobia in the developed countries, because up to the 1970s we used to listen a lot that the economic problems can be solved by decreasing population, because that could make the family have much more revenue, therefore they can live better, this can help the economy. Now we're finding that such a theory was not so much workable, because now we have a pensions problem. But before we enter into that, definitely the population transition, especially in developed countries, is bringing in new phenomena. And one such new phenomena is another theory, which I have alluded before, and this is the empty nest concept. Can you expand a little bit on this third theory?
Yeah. Now, with economic growth, and particularly women working outside the home, childcare becoming burdensome or becoming a responsibility of public investments in childcare, sooner or later, birth rates in certain developed countries, like France, for example, have shown tendencies of the birth rates falling much more than even the natural death rate. Now, with the onset of economic development and rise in incomes, longevity of population also increases. So you have a larger number of people entering into the age when they are not working anymore, above the age of 55 or even up after the age of 65. Now, with such longevity and with falling birth rates, you have a characteristic population which can be described as an aging population. And this aging population means that a larger number of people then become people above a certain age group, and therefore depend on the productive age group, which naturally becomes a smaller proportion to the total numbers. So you have a population with smaller number of children and increased numbers of people above the working age group, and the numbers who are supporting them, the productive age group, then becomes increasingly burdened by the care of people who are above a certain age. Now, once again, therefore, you have an increasing burden on the state's fiscal ability to look after a larger number of people who don't contribute as much to the economy as live off it. Now, characteristically, this is also associated with unitary families, which is a part of economic growth. And therefore, care for the aged becomes a matter, again, which has to be outside the home instead of within the home.
Therefore, we have, that is, in the population, the age composition is becoming a determining factor nowadays.
Yes.
While before, the age composition, let's say, the majority of people were within a bracket,
yes,
usually in the bracket, sometimes in a population of the fertile families, between,
yes,
20 to 40. Now,
that's
the,
right,
the pyramid, to a certain extent, is changing,
yes,
which, and this is having an effect,
yes,
not only on the economy, but also social effects on the,
yes,
composition of,
yes,
society itself.
Yes, right. In fact, in certain countries, you also have the concept where the women who usually pass the reproductive age group tend to live longer than men. And so you have not only an age composition which is one with a larger proportion of people entering into the above productive age group, but also a larger number of women outliving men. Therefore, you have this empty nest concept is really one where the home becomes a home of one person rather than a family.
I will stop for a very short break. I would like to invite our listeners to remain with us for the next part of this program, in which I think is very interesting. We're discussing aspects, not only of theory itself, but also how these theory now are practically, we're experiencing them in our daily life, especially including Malta now. We're becoming also very conscious of these problems, as we're now becoming part, not only of a globalized world, but more than of part of the post-industrial society. I'll leave you again with pieces from Schubert's music, which I know it's the favorite music of our friend Minotti here. I'll welcome you to the second part of this program, in which we're discussing with Professor Minotti from the University of Delhi in India, aspects of population and the relation of population to economic theory. We're discussing in the first part of this program the concept of what's now being called the empty nest concept. That is, that we have a society which before the pyramid was the basis, was the biggest chunk of the population was made up of the youngsters, that's people from the age of 1 or 0 to 15. Now the biggest section of the population is made by the people from 20 to 60. And then we have the lower strata of the pyramid. It's less in terms of number than the middle strata. And again, we're ending up at the higher level with people who usually is a population structure which is disfavors between inverted commas women, in the sense that women there are in a majority, and this cannot be very good to a certain extent to women, because obviously in a society you need both sexes. And more than that, and worse than that, most of these people or section of these people are on their own. They are, the composition of the family is made of not the nucleus of the family is one person sometimes, and this is leading in Europe, for example, north of Europe, the rate of suicide among older people is alarmingly increasing. For example, let's take Scandinavia, where they found that suicide among older women is on the increase as due to this situation of practically of loneliness. Professor Chakravarti Cole, we're discussing this concept of age composition. Do you foresee any possible solutions to an industrialized world, or we're conditioned to live now with this new situation?
A solution which is usually given for the use of resources could perhaps be used also in the context of human beings. That is, are moving out of the family as the nucleus of society to perhaps the community as a nucleus of society. And where this nucleus could consist of the community where you have varied proportions of different age groups being part of community action, community networking. And this could happen particularly with the deployment of the older age group in areas where you require patience and wisdom, perhaps more than any other quality. So if you were to deploy people above the physically active kind of work to one where you need counseling and counselors for an age group which depends on counsel, you would have this kind of interaction between the upper and the lower age group through community networking.
Therefore, the demographic transition is something which has entered our society and is going to remain there. It's part, let's say, of the post-industrial society.
Sure.
That is, the families are small, and without doubt, despite perhaps of all the efforts, usually from different religious denominations, to return back to the previous model of large families, to put it very simple to our listeners, that is now definitely past, especially in the industrialized and post-industrialized world. On the other hand, it is a model that is now of big families, which one finds in certain societies, for example, like the non-industrialized societies, like the Muslim world, where there, for example, we have among the Palestinians, just to give an example, the demography, the having a number of children is being used also as a political weapon.
Weapon, yeah. Yeah, that's right. It has been used also elsewhere. I wouldn't like to pinpoint this out, but this is also partly a result, an offshoot rather, of the fact of demography sometimes being used as a political tool.
Yes.
And In fact, there in certain countries, people expect that if there is a referendum, numbers will matter.
Yes.
On any particular decision. And therefore, numbers will matter, and under those circumstances, it depends on the reproductive rate. But in most such societies, and I could almost say it with certainty, why most, I would say in all societies, where this kind of a perception is inculcated and maintained, it's usually where the status of women happen to be not in the decision-making arena.
Okay.
Now, so it actually comes down to the basics of what is the key to understanding economic development. Really, it's not really the per capita income, because by that standard, all the oil-rich countries would be on the top of the list. But would they really be defined as economically developed country? Because I think development should be associated with progressiveness. And progressiveness is to deal with the mindset. If the mindset is a firm one and never accedes to change, then that is not progress. It could be development, but not progress. So the index of economic development, and I think the welfare aspect of economic development, would be the gender balance. And by gender balance doesn't mean one gender predominating over the other. It only means the correct respect that is given to the correlation between the two sexes.
This reflection brings me to the fourth and last theory that we're discussing. That is Gerrit Hardin's theory of tragedy of the commons. What this theory is all about?
Now, Gerrit Hardin was a biologist, and he looked at natural procreation as dependent on natural resources, which were non-renewable and therefore depletable and therefore open to erosion. And according to him, and that's why he becomes almost Malthusian, population tends to grow just like, and this is where he brings in this interesting metaphor, the shepherd. According to him, nature provides free pasture, and the shepherd can avail of it free of any private cost. So therefore, if he adds one more sheep to his herd, his gain is positively increasing by one, whereas his cost is zero. Now, if all shepherds decide to put one more sheep in the herd, then the total number of sheep on a given pasture increases at the cost of that pasture itself. And so therefore, although each shepherd's private cost is zero, because that pasture is zero to him, he has free entry, the social cost escalates. And since everyone gets it free without having to invest anything in that pasture, then obviously, ultimately, it is the pasture which gets destroyed. And this is what he says would happen where people of the world treat natural resources as free resources and therefore withdraw as much as they feel like through the procreation of their own numbers who will be pressurizing these resources. And as a result, those countries which have reduced their numbers by bringing down their birth rates will suddenly find themselves in a situation, says Hardin, where they will get a smaller proportionate share of the total world resources in comparison to those countries which have not brought down their birth rates. And hence, therefore, all, and he was referring to almost all the third world countries coming from the races which he calls yellow and the browns and the blacks, obviously referring to the Afro-Asian countries, increasing their numbers irresponsibly and therefore pressurizing on the world resources. What, of course, he doesn't look at is that a large part of the environment is pressurized not by numbers, but by technological intensification, which is very much under the control of Western countries. So while America puts in 67% of the world's carbon into the atmosphere and causes the hole in the ozone layer, America's advice to the less developed countries is to reduce population. And so Hardin's theory really strengthens the policymakers of both the World Bank as well as institutions like the World Bank, which stresses that population is the major problem of degradation of environment, when in reality we have quite a different scene. Hence, once again, we are deflected from the real causes which causes environmental degradation, that is, we do not have our rules of pollution right. We instead put the blame entirely on numbers.
Thank you very much, Professor Minotti, for your very interesting and informative discussion. I hope that this interview was also informative and of interest to our listeners. On my part, it was a big pleasure to have invited you to join me in this program, in which I'm, as I said in my introduction, inviting different professors of to discuss with me academic and aspects which I think are of interest to our listeners. من ناحية ين سايم مرشيا نشتيق لرينغراتسياكم تالكونتو معنا على دان البروغرام ميهور وقت لنهاليكم داشين الموسيقى سبيها من شوبرت الموسيقى فاوريتا ومزولة من بروفيسور شكرفاتي نديكم ابونتمنت على البروغرام ميهور وقت لنسلم لكم.